Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening, and from all I can tell, it's just us chickens here this morning. I guess the world has gone out on its vacation, and it's those of us who are really serious and anxious about our gardening who are listening this morning. That's great. We've had a good time talking about different kinds of things. Feel free to give me a text this morning. We've been talking about soil and how it works and how to make it better, and sort of how to rethink soils. And I'll say it again. We think of soils as being like the kinds of soils we have for containers, sterile things, a sterile soil that has no life in it, that has no worms in it, no fungi, no bacteria. It's like we're growing things hydroponically in containers. We're growing things hydroponically in our agricultural fields. That's not the way soil was originally, and you don't have to have that kind of soil. If you want really great soil, look at a forest. That's the way your soil should be. Go out if you get a chance. Go out into a forest. It's been around for a while. Not one that's been burned a lot. It's a little different in those kinds of forests. They're also rich, and they have their soil carbon incorporated in a different way. But look and feel the soil and feel the layers of soil there. They're amazing. They're amazing. And that's what plants grow in. It's not, you might, in a forest soil, you may have to dig down 6 inches or sometimes a foot before you actually find the little grains of sand. Isn't that amazing? The little grains of sand may be 6 inches or a foot down. There's all this other stuff stacked on top. And the plants grow in the grains of sand down below, but they're also growing in that looser stuff on top, and that's what we're missing. That's what we're missing. We're going to talk a little bit more if you would like. Give me a call. We'll talk about it. How to do that in your own yard. How to rebuild that great soil in your own yard. Listen, I've got some texts. People are texting me. One, Adam, I tried to answer and we just got the timing just a little bit off. You asked me about whether we could grow tulip trees, the kind of tulip magnolias, the Asian magnolias that you saw in Washington, D.C. You asked if we could grow them down here. Yes, we absolutely can. In fact, we can grow many more varieties of Asian magnolias than they can grow up north. There's a whole world of them. My friend Tony the other day pointed out to me, well, maybe there's a difference between saucer magnolias and tulip magnolias. They're both Asian magnolias. One has flowers that are shaped more like a tulip, and one has flowers that are more open. I guess there's some distinction. I don't know. But Asian magnolias do fairly well here. Most of those Asian magnolias, though by no means all, most of the ones you're familiar with and most of the ones you're going to see in Washington, D.C., bloom in spring. Here they bloom for us in February and March. We planted a bunch of those along Spring Hill Avenue, and they bloom. There's a whole parade of them along Spring Hill Avenue. Martin Vander Giesen and I put those in years ago. They're actually, I shouldn't talk about them too loud because the highway department may say something, but listen. You just enjoy them. Just quietly enjoy them when you pass by. Beautiful, beautiful tulip magnolias there along Spring Hill Avenue. Beautiful things that bloom every spring. Really nice. We can do lots of different kinds. It's good to choose, varieties. I prefer the varieties that tend to bloom in March. Because they're less often interrupted by frost, but as long as your tree, we often do just fine with even the February bloomers here. We can do lots of different kinds. There's lots of varieties. The trick is finding any of those varieties, but almost any variety you find is going to do well. Do quite as well, but there it is. Dan has got a question about his yard, and I want to answer that question, Dan. I want you to hold on, but I think Charlie's telling me we got a couple of callers. Is that right, Charlie?
Yeah, it is, and if you want to, let's go to the phone and talk to Tara.
Yeah, Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
season. Tis the season for the fungi.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Hearing an echo. Is something wrong?
Maybe on your phone, Tara.
Hello?
Go ahead, Tara. It's fine.
I can barely hear you.
Go ahead, Tara.
It's fine.
Okay, Charlie, I can hear you fine. Primarily, I would like to know a little more information about the differences between dealing with the hills, which we have in Mobile, versus the water, riverside sorts of things. You don't need horse manure in the riverside areas, because which you do in the hills, right? Because you've got fish and amphibians and birds and reptiles and all that other stuff, and decaying plant matter down on the river. I'd like to know how silting especially affects pines. Does it? Apparently, it drowns them a little. It would be so nice if I could hear you.
I'm listening to you, Tara. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. Much better now. Much better. As I say, I'm still getting an echo, though. All right. The silting drowns some of them, but what kind of long-term, if you're doing a forest-type floor on a piece of property and doing that as the edging for a river that periodically has some flooding with silting with it, how do you manage that?
Let me tackle those. So let's deal with the silting first. Silting can be a problem for certain types of trees if you get a lot of silt on top of the ground, because for a very simple reason, Tara, very simple reason. It creates a layer through which the oxygen can't get to the roots anymore. Remember that roots, we forget this, but roots need oxygen. They need oxygen. They need it for a lot of reasons. Actually, the soil creatures that the roots depend on need oxygen as well. And they also need to be able to release the gases that develop. So when the roots are down there breathing and all these creatures are down there breathing, they're releasing carbon dioxide and lots of other gases. There needs to be a way for those gases to escape too. Or they actually strangle. It's just like you would do if you were in a room that wasn't getting a lot of new oxygen in and you were just breathing out all the time. You'd use up the oxygen. You'd strangle on your own carbon dioxide. I don't mean to be gross about it, but that's what would happen. And that's what happens to plants too if you add too much soil on top, because the oxygen can't diffuse into the soil. It can't get into the soil because the soil layers are so thick down to where the roots are. And the roots and what the roots exhale can't escape from the soil. So the roots essentially choke on their own gases and the lack of fresh air, fresh oxygen from above ground. So that's what happens with silting if you're not careful. If you add a little bit of silt at a time, if it's just a little bit of silt, the trees usually survive. Their roots can grow up into it. It doesn't deprive them of oxygen, but excess silting can strangle those tree roots, and tree roots will form on top of it. So there's a problem with silting. Trees have been dealing with that for a long time. Some trees deal with it better than others. Bald cypress deal with it great. In fact, they encourage silting. Bald cypress do. And they have special adaptations to deal with that. It's not their knees don't help them breathe, but they have special adaptations that allow them to deal with being inundated with silt over a long period of time. But some trees, like pines, may not deal with it as well. So yes, it's a little more complicated than you made it out to be, where adding nitrogen is concerned. And I would say the difference between the hill and the valley is the hill and the area near the riverfront is not as different as you might think. I think in most cases, unless you have a good organic layer, you're going to have to add nitrogen. But we got to take a break, and we're going to be back, and we're going to try to talk about that just a little bit more. I hope I helped you out on the silting question there. Hey, Dan, boy, you got a ton of questions here. I'm going to try to get to all of them. And we've got some other folks coming in. Charlie, I think we got another caller. We'll be back.
Celebrate your independence during the month of July with a Liberty Safe during Mike Ward's Scratch and Dent Truckload Sale, now going on. Save hundreds on slightly blemished Liberty Safes with a lifetime replaceable warranty and a fire or attempted break-in. Best of all, have your Liberty Safe delivered up to 50 miles ground floor at no extra charge. Financing for 12 months at 0% interest is available with approved credit. Just look for the giant Liberty Safe at exit 5B, I-65 in Moffitt and Mobile. Call 471-1137.
We all know someone who believes their plants are more than, well, just plants. They feed, water them, they talk to them, even name them.
Perk up, Fred. Fred, wake up.
People who love their plants just seem to get a certain something from helping them grow. Non-plant people don't really understand, but Cecil Christenberry and all the folks at Old Time Feed in Fairhope understand your plants and your lawn and have the expertise you need to keep your plants thriving. Old Time Feed has been in the nursery, feed, and seed business since man landed on the moon. So buy the highest quality plants and get the best advice to make sure you start off with healthy specimens that will brighten up your home and your yard that will thrive in our coastal climate from Old Time Feed. For homeowners, contractors, and yeah, even supplies for home chicken coops, Old Time Feed in Fairhope at Highway 98 and Greeno Road.
Does a new building with a wind rating of 175 miles per hour appeal to you? That certainly is within our capability. This is Scott Armstrong with Kemco Metal Buildings. For almost 50 years, Kemco has been designing and constructing the highest quality steel buildings for our customers. Whether you need a building for commercial, industrial, agricultural, storage, church, or community use, or if you just want a Kemco building for yourself, please contact us. Kemco will use state-of-the-art software and our many years of experience to help you custom design a metal building that best suits your needs. Check out our website at KemcoBuildings.com or stop by our 40,000 square foot facility on Pollard Road in Daphne. We're big enough to get the job done, yet small enough to give you homegrown service. That is KEMKO 251-626-0594. Our goal is to exceed your expectations.
Business people want to stay in the loop of things when it comes to permits, deeds, bankruptcies, and which companies have purchased business licenses. That's why so many subscribe to the Mobile Record. If this public information is of interest to you, at the click of a mouse on a one-stop site, you should sign up today. To learn more about the Mobile Record and the services it offers, visit our website, themobilerecord.com, or email us at publicrecords@themobilerecord.com. If you're not subscribing, chances are your competition is.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. And hope you're hearing me okay. And listen, we've had several callers this morning and a lot of texts, and I'm going to try to get to those texts here, real quickly. Dan sent me a picture, and Dan, we're going to talk a little bit more about your lawn too, but you sent me a picture. Dan sent me pictures of a leaf that has a lot of purple on it, leaves that are very purplish. And he asked me, was this Loropetalum? Well, no, actually, it's kind of a good guess, Dan, but not Loropetalum at all. It's actually a crepe myrtle. It's a type of crepe myrtle, that has purple leaves. And I don't remember I wish I could remember the name of that crepe myrtle, but, I don't right now, but it has purple leaves, and that's what that is. It's a crepe myrtle there, and there we go. And we had, I had another texter who sent me a picture of a plant with roses with a lot of holes in the leaves. This is it didn't give a name, but something has taken a hole punch to the leaves of my roses. Almost a perfect circle bite. Some have already lost all of their leaves. Well, those hole bites are pretty simple. Those are leaf cutter bees, and they make these cool little. It looks like somebody just took a hole punch and punched your leaves. They're the coolest things in the world. Those are leaf cutter bees. They do minor damage to plants. But actually, I think if your roses are losing most of their leaves, it's not the result of the hole of the hole cutter bees. It is actually the result of some kind of foliar disease affecting the leaves. Usually the leaf cutter bees just make a little hole, and the leaf says, oh, okay, all right, okay. But the leaf doesn't, nothing happens to the leaf. The leaf is still there. Part of the leaf that remains has plenty of, is still doing plenty of photosynthesis, so the plant remains healthy. So, yeah, I think that the leaf cutter bees have done their business. They're through. Don't need to worry about them. They've already made their nests. That's what they're doing, is they're making nests with the, by cutting those little pieces. Don't worry about it. It's minor damage. It's what we call aesthetic damage. It doesn't do real damage to the plants. If your roses are losing leaves, a lot of leaves, it's for other reasons. For other reasons. Sharon, let's talk about Sharon, and then I think we're going to be able to get right to Dan. Sharon, I'm listening.
Hey, I found suddenly dead spots in my lawn. And at first I suspected fungal disease because of so much rain. But then I consulted with my sister, and she thought it was some kind of bug. So when I read about chinch bugs, it sort of sounded like it might be chinch bugs. So that's what I treated for, and it hasn't been enough time for me to see if it has stopped it yet. But what I wanted to ask you, is this the time of year when chinch bugs are a problem?
So here, yes and no. But I can tell you almost with absolute certainty that you don't have chinch bugs. And here's why. If your sister lives in an area that's gets dry during the summer, we've occasionally had problems with chinch bugs here in Mobile, but it's actually pretty rare. We only tend to have problems with chinch bugs in July and August, usually late in July and later in August, the damage begins to show up, only when we have a real exceptional drought. And during exceptional drought conditions, we do see chinch bugs. I almost never see chinch bugs in a normal year, and in a year with as much rainfall as we've been getting this year, most of us, anyway, chinch bugs, very unlikely, very unlikely. So the question, I would say that probably it is more than likely a foliar disease. It could have developed last year. I'd have to, you know, we'd have to look at it. It could be a root issue because of excess water. It could be other things. I have a feeling it's not a bug. I have a feeling that it is a foliar disease or a disease that results from excess rainfall. Chinch bugs in our areas are very rare. By the way, where does your sister live?
Mandeville, Louisiana.
Yeah. Well, Mandeville's pretty chinch bugs are pretty rare there too. My theory on that as to why she thinks it's chinch bugs. But here's the funny thing.
Bugs, so she thought it was some kind of a bug.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think it's a bug. I don't think it's a bug. It could, what do you have, centipede or St. Augustine?
I have both.
Yeah. Yeah. Centipede. Just, I mean, at the drop of a hat, centipede will die out. It is very susceptible to a lot of things, including, and before I say it couldn't be a bug, including nematodes. And I do find that certain parts of the yard where nematodes are a problem, centipede can die out readily there because it's so susceptible to nematodes. Nematodes are very microscopic little creatures. There's not an insecticide that you can use to kill them. It really, there's not much you can do if it is nematodes except to hope that the St. Augustine takes over, because St. Augustine is pretty resistant to the nematode damage. Doesn't seem to be nearly as susceptible. I think you got a fungal problem there. I think it's a fungal disease problem. The fact of the matter is that the disease has already had its effect. And so spraying that area, if it's not, if the area isn't growing, is the area growing in size at all?
It was growing. But this morning it doesn't seem to have grown any from yesterday, but earlier in the week it was growing every day.
That definitely sounds like a fungal problem. That definitely sounds like fungal diseases, something happening that rapidly. One of the things that can happen is you can get, is it possible that there's a green area that is regreening in the center of this patch?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm thinking it's a fungal disease that is working below ground. Are you irrigating your lawn at all?
No.
Yeah. So I think it may have something to do with this high rainfall we're having right now. It's one of the issues in Mobile is that we always do get some fungal diseases that begin to take hold. Once a fungus is developed like that, you can try a fungicide, but if it's not spreading aggressively, the fungicide isn't going to make the grass come back. So that's not going to be an issue. St. Augustine will reinvade that area. Make sure that the soil is not too dense. If you can dig the soil fairly easily in that area that's left behind, it should be reinvaded fairly quickly. By the St. Augustine, if there's any St. Augustine nearby. But I'm pretty sure that it's a fungal disease, ground or above ground, okay?
It will just peter out on its own and the grass will regrow. But I thought maybe I could put some granular fungicide on the lawn, the whole lawn. What about that?
Well, here's what I would do. I don't think the fungicide is going to make a lot of difference. And fungicides are pretty toxic for people and for lawns. But if you're going to use a fungicide, do this. Don't put it on the whole lawn. Put it only on the area around the ring where you see the ring is, because that's where that fungus is going to spread, is to the area immediately around it. It would cost you a lot of money, and it would be a waste, and it would create a lot of problems if you spread it over the whole lawn. So just apply it right around the border, within 2 feet border of that ring. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I like that better. So, that's less work for me, too.
It's a lot less work, and it's not nearly as toxic, and it doesn't cause problems. I think the problem's already probably pretty well gone. I don't think the fungicide is going to handle any additional problems. But if you do apply fungicide, apply it right around the edge there.
Is that typical of it? It just hits and then stops?
It does.
Okay. All right.
It does. And it's something everybody has in their lawns. It's just one of the issues of growing lawns here in a place where lawns aren't very natural. So, any rate, good to hear from you, Sharon. Hey, Charlie, if I pushed up against the break here, if we got time, we're right up against the break. I know we've got some other callers. Dan, I am coming back to you. I think, Brian, is that you're another caller that we've got? We're going to come back right after this break.
My Guguza, Guguza Bella. She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Guguza, I wanna be. 'Cause Guguza is so crazy over me.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
The Gulf Coast can expect scattered showers and thunderstorms today. Temperatures will be in the upper 80s this afternoon. Tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid-70s. And for Monday, a few showers and thunderstorms with high temperatures around 90 degrees. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 1065.
FM Talk 1065, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
The Husqvarna Fleet Program is back at Robert Stowe Power Equipment. Husqvarna and Robert Stowe Power Equipment have teamed up to bring you the best deals on commercial zero turns of the season. Listen up, landscapers. Right now, get a Husqvarna commercial zero turn starting at $136 a month for qualified buyers and receive a blower and string trimmer for free. Do you feel like the yard work never ends? Husqvarna's robotic 450X auto mower gives you a better looking lawn with less effort. The auto mower maneuvers around your lawn without supervision, even over tricky terrain and obstacles. It knows when it needs power and directs itself back to the charging station. With convenient control options, the auto mower allows you to set it and forget it, even from your smartphone. Thanks to Husqvarna, you can have a great looking lawn and more time to enjoy it this summer. Visit Robert Stowe Power Equipment today to see how they can help with all your lawn and garden needs. Highway 59 South in Robertsdale, right at the split by the Catholic Church. Or visit them online at robertstowepower.com. Husqvarna, ready when you are.
It's time for the 85th Annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, the largest fishing tournament in the world. Hey, it kicks off with the Mossy Oak Liars Contest on Thursday, July 19th on Dolphin Island. Fishing begins at 5 Friday morning, July 20th, with the Molly Ringwalds playing that night. Hey, the rodeo site and all the musical acts are free to spectators for the weekend, and the total awards package this year valued at $500,000 in cash and prizes, with 30 categories and 4 jackpots, including Crane Works Red Snapper Jackpot. For tickets and more information, visit ADSFR.com.
I'm Brandy Hambright, candidate for Mobile County Circuit Court Judge. I believe people want honesty and transparency in the courtroom. Citizens want to be heard and to know their judges are working for them. On July 17th, a vote for me will put honest, conservative values on the bench. I have nearly 2 decades of courtroom experience. I respect the law, and I am not afraid to be tough. Remember, vote Brandy Hambright on July 17th to keep our court conservative. Paid for by the Committee to Elect Brandy Hambright, Circuit Court, P.O. Box 1901, Mobile, Alabama, 36633.
Since the dawn of time, mankind has sought enlightenment, yearned to know if the earth was round, how fire worked, and why apples fell to the ground. The cave house and quill pen are gone, replaced by 3-bedroom homes and cell phones, but we're still curious. That's why a great local newspaper is so important. Lagniappe Weekly is the Mobile area's newspaper, with the stories nobody has the guts or knowledge to report. Lagniappe gets to the bottom of things, providing top-notch journalism every great city deserves. No simple one-inch deep stories here. Plus, we're locally owned, too. 30,000 papers, more than 1,200 distribution locations, and an increased circulation this year to reach even more readers in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Lagniappe, the paper that breaks the big stories with tough, thorough reporting. Plus, the area's best commentary, cuisine, arts, sports, and business coverage. Pick up your copy at grocery stores, businesses, drugstores, in our iconic hideous pink or Regal purple boxes. In the mail for just $1 a week and online at lagniappemobile.com. Lagniappe, something extra for Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of questions this morning about things. Sharon, I hope we helped on that question about fungi. Fungus is a good thing for plants. It can be a bad thing for plants. Yards, the idea of the lawn developed in Europe, where they had many fewer problems with foliar diseases because it's drier there. We brought it here. Grass grows very fast. Fungi develops very fast in a climate like ours. And we have the problem. It's because we imported this weird concept about lawns. I don't mind having lawn. I actually like having grass in parts of areas of the lawn. As I said, lawns are very critical. They're very important to your yard for one reason. And a very important reason, it's a great place to wrestle your brother. If you don't need a place to wrestle your brother, don't spend a lot of money trying to grow a lawn. That's my view. If you need a lot of lawn, get a horse. It's just lawns are tough. They're going to have problems here. No matter what, we can have fewer problems. We try to have fewer problems. But that leads us, Dan, I'm coming to you. Brian, but I got to deal with Brian's question first. Brian, you had a question about how to mow zoysia. Is that right?
Hey, Bill, I had a question about zoysia. Yeah. Hey, Bill, can you hear me?
I can hear you really well.
Hey, I had a question about zoysia. So back in February, I put down some zoysia sod, the new Palisades, and I'd say about 90% of it is nice and plush. Every once in a while, there's about a one-foot circle of sod that's just dying away. It starts off by, it looks like it's not getting any water at all. The leaves on the grass start to shrivel up, and then they slowly turn brown, die out. Any idea what could be causing that?
Well, yeah, I'd have to look at it specifically. If how old is the lawn? Can I ask again? How long has it been in? How long have you had it?
I put it in February.
February. Yeah, so there are a couple of issues. One is that, and this can be a problem, If the soil, if the sod wasn't making really good contact with the dirt underneath it, if for any reason the sod didn't make good contact, it'll sort of survive. It'll get along as long as it doesn't get too hot, and as long as there's plenty of moisture and it doesn't get too hot, it'll survive without good contact with the soil underneath it. But sometimes we see where the soil sort of falls away, if you can imagine. You've dug up the soil, it can be a little bit uneven. If the soil falls away from the sod, sometimes you'll see little patches of soil like that developing. I am very optimistic about some of the zoysias. There are several of the zoysias I've tried, some of the new zoysias, that have done very well. Palisades was one that now is now the one we seem to be stuck on. It's the one that's available to us. It's a good zoysia because it grows tall, and you can let it grow tall, and that's very good. It tends to eliminate weeds. It stays healthier as a result of that. But I also find that it is susceptible. It is just as susceptible as any other grass to fungal diseases, and it's just going to happen. It does tend to repair itself fairly well. The patches often stay small, but last year I saw in a lot of the new generation zoysia lawns, I saw a lot of fungal diseases causing a lot of problems. You may be beginning to see that too. If you've lived in an area that's been, it's kind of funny. Some parts of Mobile have gotten a lot of rain this year, a lot of rain. Some parts haven't gotten quite as much. If you live in the areas that have gotten a lot of rain, I would say that, it could be a fungal disease that's beginning to affect that lawn right now. In general, as long as the rains don't keep up, the fungus disease kind of dies down. But I think that's probably what's happening right now. Yep. Did I lose him, Charlie?
He's gone.
Yeah, shoot. Well, sorry about that. Would love to talk more, Brian, about how to deal with that. But I think it is a fungal disease. Brian, one thing so how do we deal with this? Let me talk a little bit about it. Don't leave heavy layers of grass clippings. That's a big thing. That's a big problem with zoysia. I prefer to cut my zoysia a little bit higher this time of year, 2 inches, 2.5 inches, a little bit higher. If you're going to have zoysia, particularly the new varieties, let them drift up to about 2.5 inches. Sometimes you can go 3 and 3.5 inches. The big thing I'm finding is, go ahead, if you miss a lawn mowing with your zoysia, if you miss a lawn mowing episode, you've got a lot of grass there, don't save those grass clippings. In this case, put your grass bag on your lawnmower, save those grass clippings. That will help a little bit, may help just a little bit, not probably not much, but a little bit to help to prevent the spread of foliar disease. But it also keeps from developing too much buildup around the crowns of the plants of grass. So you don't want a lot of buildup of cut grass around the crowns, because I think that can encourage some of the soil diseases too in zoysia. So you might use a grass collection bag this time of year to help discourage some of those soil diseases. You also have to be careful about, with this much rainfall, I would back off on the watering just a bit. And in case there's a problem with soil contact, just make sure there's no gaps between, you can kind of feel with your feet. Make sure there's no gaps between the sod and the ground underneath it. So those are some thoughts. Hey, Dan, let's get to your grass problems. Dan texted me. It seems to be a morning where people are having lots of problems with grass. Dan texted me a picture of his yard. And right next to the sidewalk, and between the sidewalk and the street, there are some growing patches of dead lawn. And Dan is saying, I think I have dollar weed. Well, Dan, first off, let me say you don't have dollar weed. And this is an important distinction. You actually have something that's called colt's foot. Some people have called it dollar weed because the leaves are somewhat round, but it's not the traditional dollar weed we talk to about most of the time. It's called colt's foot or pony's foot, and it's a dichondra. And this dichondra, which is actually used for lawns sometime in Florida, believe it or not, this dichondra, pony's foot, colt's foot, is very different than dollar weed. It doesn't necessarily grow in really wet places. So forget that. This is not the result of wetness. What we see oftentimes around sidewalks and between sidewalks and pavements are these dying patches of grass. Has nothing to do with the weeds that grow there. It has everything to do with the fact that that concrete is absorbing tons of heat. Heat to the surrounding soil, and that causes the soil around those sidewalks to die. We often see that. That can be a big problem. The other problem is that the soil can be somewhat compacted around the sidewalks, and the water doesn't move naturally through that soil the way it does in other areas. So you can have drainage issues that can be either too dry or too wet, but it's the fact that these are near the sidewalk and between the sidewalk and the street that you're seeing the problems more than likely. If you use a herbicide on the pony's foot or on the colt's foot, you know what happens? You get bare soil. You don't get your grass back. So the colt's foot, the pony's foot, is not causing the grass to disappear. The pony's foot is coming in because the grass has disappeared. You don't see it in the healthy areas of grass. It's really only in the areas where the grass. So the key is we got to get that grass growing back a little more healthy. One of the things you can do is take patches, and Dan, we can talk about this. You might call me next week and let's talk specifically about do it. But let's take patches, break up the soil just a little bit. Let's add some organic matter, which will make that soil more resilient, less susceptible to drainage issues and to drought. And I think that's going to improve those areas. You don't have to do it all at once. Let's just talk about how to do it. I don't recommend using a herbicide until you figure out how to make your grass grow right, or you're just going to end up with soil. That's how it works. You said we got a caller. I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, this is Johnny caller? In Grand Bay.
Bill, this is Johnny in Grand
Bay. Hey, Bill. Johnny. I was going to ask you if I've got a uncle up in Birmingham that wants he wants me to bring him evening primrose from down here, and he thinks it's a flower that he can grow in his garden, and I think it's a weed. What do you think?
Well, there are a lot of different kinds of evening primroses. The most famous primrose of all is the showy evening primrose that grows. It has a very narrow range, basically in a few places in northwest Florida, in counties and up along the Tom Bigbee River up into Mississippi. All the showy evening primrose. It's one of the showiest primroses of all. William Bartram came to Mobile, came to Stockton, in 1776, 77. And he looked at the flowers the first time anybody described it. He said, it's the most pompous flower yet known. That's what he said. It was very showy. He called it the showy evening primrose. It's a beautiful flower. I've grown it in my garden. It's very beautiful. It gets 6 feet tall. 6 feet tall. Beautiful yellow flowers that are gigantic. This time of year, they're only going to open in the evening. As we get into fall, they begin to open during the day as the light lowers. There's good evidence that those plants are even edible. So, yes, the showy evening primrose is kind of cool. Johnny, I'm going to run out of time to tell you how to do it, but it's not an unreasonable request, and so I'm going to figure out how I help you get him some of those showy evening primroses. Okay?
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Yeah, thank you. So we're going to be back to work on that and answer some of your questions. We've got a short segment coming up. We'll be back.
I left Tennessee very much alive, and I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was about outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
This is Chris Francis, board-certified master arborist at Chris Francis Tree Care. Trees are such a valuable part of your property. Want to know how to keep pest problems away from your trees? Start by keeping them healthy, making sure they're growing in a favorable environment, providing the proper nutrients, and maintaining the appropriate pH. Meanwhile, certain pests attack perfectly healthy plants. Timely applications of oils, soaps, insecticides, fungicides, and fertilizers will significantly improve survivability. But the key is having knowledgeable experts making regular site visits to catch or prevent problems before they occur, all while protecting the pollinators and beneficials. Does this sound overwhelming? Let our plant health care professionals do it for you. Call 4TREE, that's F-O-R-T-R-E-E. Chris Francis Tree Care. Online, chrisfrancistreecare.com, or find us on Facebook. Or call 367-8733, 251-4TREE.
Yeah, what do you want?
I'd like to get a quote on my homeowner's insurance.
I didn't hear the secret knock.
I did the secret knock.
Of course, it's pretty loud in here. Could you do the secret knock again?
I suppose, but...
On second thought, it's really late, and I don't like giving quotes after hours.
But I learned the secret knock and everything.
Oh, all right.
Okay, here we go.
That's not the secret knock.
You didn't let me finish.
Even I know it's more than two knocks, maybe three.
Hey, could you come closer to the peephole?
Okay. Oh, what was that for?
That's for not helping me save money on my insurance. Forget it.
Where are you going to get help with your insurance at this hour?
I'm calling Jack Green after hours.
Business, home, or auto. When you need a quote right away, you can reach Jack Green after hours.
No secret knock?
Nope.
After hours, call Jack Green, 767-6550. 767-6550.
A fine Cabernet is a drink, but not all drinks are a fine wine. A luxury sedan is a car, but not all cars are luxury sedans. There are books of literature, but not all books are literature. Legacy Oaks at Spring Hill is an apartment home community, but most apartment homes are not Legacy Oaks. See the difference for yourself at Legacy Oaks, located in the heart of Spring Hill. Secluded, yet convenient to so much. A community that will change how you view apartment homes in Mobile. Great design, spacious floor plan, attached garage, large eat-in kitchen, plus roomy bathrooms featuring jacuzzi tubs. All inside a large gated campus in the middle of Mobile. Complete with amenities like pool, fitness facility, clubhouse, outdoor entertainment area, and lots of green space. Close to shopping, dining, and just minutes from I-65. 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms are available now. Take an online tour at LegacyOaksApartmentHomes.com or see them in person at the corner of DeRue and College just off Dauphin Street in Mobile.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
I'm only happy when it's complicated.
Hey, let's get back to this because we've got just a little bit of time. I wanted to try to get to as many questions as I could. Dan asked me, we're going to talk a little bit about how to treat that next week when we have a little more time. You might want to call me next week because, Dan, let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, on the phone. Let's just have a little bit of back and forth. We can kind of talk about how to deal with those areas. But Dan asked me, can you seed St. Augustine? No, you can't. You just can't. You can theoretically seed Centipede, but it is very difficult. It is a mess. I don't recommend it. For an area like that in particular, Dan, the smart thing to do is to patch it with sod, and deal with it like that. And we'll talk about how to do that. Before you do that, before you buy sod though, let's talk about how to make that soil work. And because it's going to be vulnerable soil where it is. It has a lot of drainage issues. Tony, to ask you your question, Tony's got a beautiful lawn. It's nice and green. I can't tell what's in it. That's the nice thing about lawns. I don't know whether you got weeds or St. Augustine. It just looks green and lush, and that's fine. But, should you get the clippings up? You know, Dan, if you're not, Tony, I wouldn't worry about that. I really wouldn't worry about it too much. I worry about it in the zoysia for a lot of reasons. That's another thing. But with St. Augustine, the clippings break down pretty quickly. I haven't seen that kind of problem in St. Augustine, to figure that out. Bobby has a question that about several crepe myrtles that are not blooming. Yeah, Bobby, there's a bunch of questions I need to ask you. I don't know that fertilizer will help at all. I doubt it will. Let me tell you about blooming crepe myrtles real quickly. Crepe myrtles bloom on new growth, and they bloom best when they're growing most vigorously. There are some new varieties of crepe myrtles that don't bloom as well for us because they're not as well adapted to being in the deep south. You may have one of those. That's one problem. The other problem is that the crepe myrtle is struggling. If the crepe myrtle is growing vigorously, then I gotta say, maybe you've got one of those varieties that doesn't grow very well here for us, that's not good for us. Maybe you're having in too much shade. Those would be the two things. That's why we're going to have to talk about it. You're going to have to call me back, Bobby, next week, and let's talk a little bit more about what your crepe myrtles look like so I can tell you whether I don't think fertilizer is going to make any difference at all. Your blueberries didn't bear much fruit this year. Should I cut back, fertilize? First off, no. If your blueberries aren't, unless your blueberries are 12 years old, 15 years old, if you've got a 15-year-old blueberry, I'd say, yeah, let's talk about cutting back. My suspicion is your blueberries are kind of new. If they're less than 7 years old, you definitely don't want to cut them back. That's not the problem at all. If they didn't bear fruit this year, it's got to do with too much shade generally, or it has to do with, we'll have to talk about it. We'll have to sort through it. So Bobby, call me back next week because there are too many variables for me to answer your question in a really, really good, smart way. I can't do it this week. Is that fair? Because I want to give you a good answer. So we've had lots of questions this week about different kinds of things. I got some great pictures from Jim in Georgetown, texted me. And it's an interesting concept that Jim has. Jim has heard me say that you can either have a fig tree or you can have figs. You can't have both. And what I mean by that, very simply, is that if your fig has become a tree, you're not going to be able to pick the figs. They'll be way up in the canopy. The mockingbirds and the cardinals are going to get them all. I can just tell you, before you get to them, they'll have half-pecked them, and it's a mess. People who grow figs and who really are trying to harvest figs don't grow fig trees. They grow fig bushes. And so you want to prune, I say, to get that bush-like effect. We can talk about how to do that next week if you've got any questions. Jim has decided that there's a compromise here. I don't know how well it'll work, but Jim has a half fig bush. And that probably could work okay until the top of the plant starts shading out the bottom of the plant. Jim, as long as you can manage that so that the bottom is getting plenty of sunlight, I guess it could work. Maybe there's some advantages to it. Maybe the mockingbirds and the cardinals will stick to the top part of the tree. Jim, I'm counting on you to tell me whether that's the case. It could be a strategy. it's an interesting strategy to try to figure out. Who knows? Maybe that'll work just fine. Ooh, boy, we've tried to get through all of these questions today, tried to answer them as best I can. You know, with this rainfall, we are going to see more foliar disease problems, more disease problems of leaves on grasses and other things. And you know, grasses are just susceptible to it. Or that there really is an easy way of dealing with those foliar problems. But we'll talk a little bit more about that next week and try to figure out some ways. I don't know that there's a secret to avoiding fungus altogether in lawns here along the Gulf Coast. It can be very difficult when you've got as much rain as we have. One thing I tell people is, oh, man, if you're irrigating your lawn every day, cut the irrigation system off. Causing problems, it's going to encourage those diseases. And then we got to talk about soil a lot today. That's something I'd like to talk about more because, you know, a lot of issues that Dan and other people are having with their lawns right now, it's the problem of not understanding what topsoil really is, what plants really like to grow in. We'll talk a bit about more that next week, and I'm going to help Dan. We're going to get practical about it. I'm going to help Dan create soil that's like forest soil for his grass to grow in. Good music. We'll be back next week.
Cornbread and butter beans, and you cross the table. Eating beans and making love as long as I am able. Hoeing corn and cotton too, and when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love again all over. Goodbye, don't you cry, I'm going to Louisiana. The vacuum dog gonna pick that hog and marry Louisiana. Sing song, ding dong, I'll take a trip to China.
Awfully far.
Cornbread, butter beans, then back to North Carolina.
That's all right.